Hey everyone, my name is Lauren Brill. For the past decade, I worked as a sportscaster, but now I'm using truth to help change the world. Unsealed Advice is a podcast where we talk about a variety of issues that impact people in our society. In this edition of Unsealed Advice, we caught up with psychotherapist Allie Cohen to talk about grief in the wake of the death of former NBA star Kobe Bryant, along with eight other people who all died in a helicopter crash this past weekend. So we are here with psychotherapist Allie Cohen. Allie, we got tragic news this past Sunday about the passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, along with seven other people. And I really feels like it just rocked a lot of people's world, including my own. I was very upset, especially about his young daughter. Why do you think that I, along with so many others, feel so much emotion about people we don't even know?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that this is a complicated issue. There's a lot of layers to this, but let's start off with the most obvious, right? I mean, a lot of times with celebrities that we see on TV and they've had interviews and we're following their careers, either through sports or some other form of entertainment, we do get this idea that we know them personally. We feel connected to them. We're watching their lives. And even though we don't have that mutuality of them caring or even knowing about us, we still feel connected to this person that we've been rooting for, that we're following in a very supportive and loving way. So in some ways, we do feel like we know that person. And in a lot of ways, we know a lot about this person. Sure, there are things that we don't know, but we have that in our everyday life with all sorts of people in our life, things that we don't know. So it doesn't really cloud our ability to feel close to this person. And then, of course, as we grow up with them and watch them grow up, that connection is even more strong. And we connect it to our own childhoods. We connect it to our own experiences. And the bond just gets tighter from there. So it is like losing someone that you've loved.
Now, with Kobe's death, it seems like you can't turn on the TV, you can't turn on social media without seeing a tribute or a message or a thought about his passing. How does collective grief impact people?
Well, I mean, I think for some people it's helpful and for others it's difficult. I know that in my own case yesterday when I heard the news, it was just through a simple text. And of course I went through that initial shock. And is this a hoax? And how can I recognize if this is even real? And although I was sad, there was an initial part of me that was like, I don't want to watch the news yet. I'm not ready to watch the news yet. I don't want to turn on the TV. And, you know, we're lucky in a way these days that we have alternate things to watch, like Netflix and things without commercials. And if you want to avoid the news, you can. And I did that for most of the day yesterday until before I went to bed, and that's really when I learned more about it. So I think for some people, they have this can't look away feeling, and they want as much information and to see it and feel it as much as possible. And for others, it can be a little bit overwhelming. But to get back to your question about collective mourning and what it means is, it seems that people are much more attuned to their feelings in this moment. And sometimes grief is one of those things that we don't look away from as much as our other feelings.
When we feel grief and that emotion, how should we process it? What should we do? I mean, it can be overwhelming at times for some people.
Right. So grief is very complicated, and I've worked with it in a lot of my practice because, you know, almost all of us have lost someone that's very significant to us, and if we haven't yet, we're going to. And grief can look like a lot of things. It can feel like a lot of things. The timeline is different for everyone. And of course, we do have, you know, the five stages of grief that are very traditional and typical. Anger, denial, despair, bargaining, acceptance. And I tell my clients they really can go in at any order. They can exist at the same time. They can go backwards, forwards, sideways. You can have three at once, two at once, one to the bottom. Like, there's no rhyme or reason with a lot of these things. They are very changeable and dynamic feelings. So I think the first thing I usually tell people is just allow it to come over you. You know, don't put a block there. Don't put a stop there. And, you know, give yourself time and space to feel things. So if that means you need to stay home and watch all the memorials happening on TV, then do it. And then eventually, some people will say, like, okay, well, now I can't get my homework done, or now I can't go to work today. You know, so you take the time that you need within reason, and when it starts to really affect your life, that's when you have to decide, do I need help processing this? What are these other outlets that I can take to help myself through this? How can I make time for my feelings, but also manage them? So it's complicated for sure.
You said something to me earlier that was interesting before we started this, that grief really allows you to learn more about your life. Mm-hmm. How and what exactly did you mean by that?
So what I meant was, I feel and I've seen that a lot of us are not so in touch with our feelings on a day-to-day basis. And there are a lot of feelings that people repress, they keep down, they don't listen to, they don't validate. And a lot of times what we see in people, that there are some emotions that are very easy to express. And I think we can all agree anger is one of those things, which is why we see so much violence and fighting on TV and in the office. And, you know, anger, like we're very comfortable expressing anger. Grief is a different emotion, but it's one that's very, very strong when it comes on. So strong that you can't push it away. It doesn't allow itself to be pushed away. It's going to be there no matter how far down you try to push it. And I've literally, you know, I've been at funerals and memorials and, you know, been in touch with people who've lost others. And I've noticed that some people, like, they can't even allow themselves to cry. And I saw people vomiting at a funeral because they wouldn't cry.
You're saying that it's important to let go of your emotions. Don't hold them in.
Of course. And I think people are so afraid to let their emotions come out, because if they haven't been managing their feelings, then sometimes letting out feelings can be overwhelming. They could be out of control, but it's almost like you have to let that happen. You have to surrender and get more comfortable with letting your feelings out so they don't build up. If you express your feelings on a more daily basis, you're not going to have that same explosion. And I think people who are in therapy, they really start to learn that early on, that something that they were so afraid to do has actually made everything in their life a whole lot easier.
Now, on top of losing Kobe, and there was eight other people on that flight who died, including three children. Gianna, his daughter, who is 13, along with two of her teammates, also passed away. A lot of parents have to sit down and talk about this with their children. Is there a way for parents to talk about death, especially talking about death of maybe children their children's age?
Right. I mean, very, very tragic what happened on that helicopter. And of course, you know, our blessings and our healing prayers go out to everyone involved. And there are ways to talk to your children about these tragic events. And I think it can vary from person to person, especially because of religious beliefs, right? So for some people, religion is very helpful when having these conversations, because, you know, of the idea of, okay, they're in a better place, they are being taken care of, God needed them. And in some ways, those conversations might be a bit easier to have. But if you're in a family that's not necessarily guided by faith, or that's not what you believe, I still think those conversations are necessary. So many times, just the way that we avoid our feelings, we avoid topics that make us uncomfortable, and 100% death is one of those topics. I can attest to that on my own. I can tell you I've seen it in my practice. There are plenty of books about, you know, written for therapists to help therapists talk to people about death, because it's this inevitable thing that we keep looking away from. And I think, again, it's the more we practice with these discussions, the more they're out in the open, the more we face it, the easier it will become. Not that it will ever be easy, but easier.
Does grief have a timeline? Is there a time period where it's okay, enough grieving, you need to move on? Or is it different for everyone?
Right. Well, so I had said earlier that it isn't very clear cut in that way, that there really isn't a timeline. In the DSM-5, which is the book that we use for diagnosing criteria, there is a term that we use called complicated grief, and that would really be used for someone who has been in a mourning period for 2 years or more and is not really able to move on. But generally, getting help and finding support, you're able to live your life, but there are some things that are really hard to get over, and I don't think it's appropriate to put a timeline on it. And some things are just very, very difficult. And I think, you know, thinking about Vanessa Bryant, I mean, I don't know, like, I think it's a different assessment for everyone. If she didn't get out of bed for the next year, I don't think anyone would judge her for that. You know, she just suffered tremendous, tremendous loss. So I just think there's a different scale for everyone. Every situation calls for its own period.
All right. That's perfect, Allie. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Lauren.